On the way to the assembly, David Ben-Gurion paused at Shar Hagai, the road to Jerusalem that was also known as Bab el-Wad, where a year before so many had died in attempting to break the Arab siege of Jerusalem. And there, as captured in a famous photo, Ben-Gurion planted a tree. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 204, Tu B'Shvat in a Divided City. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. On February 14, 1949, Israel's Knesset convened for the first time in Jerusalem. The war had continued after the ceasefire. The renewed strength of armaments allowed Israel to hold Western Jerusalem, but another attempt to breach the old city walls failed. As Israel's victory over the Arab armies was finalized, the sacred city would remain divided, with Jews ultimately unable to reach the holiest parts of the city. Or as Naomi Shemer would famously put it in her song, Jerusalem of Gold, the city was Ha'ir asher badad yoshevet ubiliba choma, the city that sits alone with a wall in its heart. What was known as the Mandelbaum Gate would divide Jerusalem. And it was in the new city that the Israeli government would convene. Surely a striking moment in Jewish history. Yet perhaps what most embodies the achievement was a small act in which Ben-Gurion engaged on his way to the opening of the Israeli parliament. Immediately after the Israeli victory was certain, elections were held. The Jewish Center for Political Affairs website summarizes what occurred. Quote, on 25 January 1949, after the ceasefire on the Egyptian front had come into effect, but well before the first armistice agreement, that with Egypt, was signed, nationwide elections took place for the Constituent Assembly, which subsequently converted itself into the first Knesset. Quote unquote, provisionally, it was decided that the elections would be held under a strictly proportional system, inter alia because that appeared simplest, and could be applied in minimum time, an important consideration in view of Israel's ongoing struggle for recognition and for membership in the United Nations. About 87% of all eligible voters participated in the elections. 12 out of the 21 lists which had been presented obtained the minimum of 1% of the valid votes, and thus were represented by at least one member in the Assembly. There were 120 members in the Assembly, a number adopted after lengthy discussions as a symbol of continuity in Jewish sovereign history in the land of Israel. The Great Knesset, the representative assembly, established by Jews in their country after the return from exile in Babylonia at the end of the 5th century BCE, had also been composed of 120 members. By far the largest number of mandates, 46, went to the Labor Party headed by Ben-Gurion, followed by the United Workers Party with 19, the United Religious Front with 16, the Chayrut Movement headed by Menachem Begin, former commander of the Irgun, Etzel, with 14, the General Zionists with 7, and the Progressives with 5. End quote. Thus did the Knesset, Israel's legislature, come into being. Elected president of the State of Israel, the formal head of state, was Chaim Weizmann, and it was he who addressed the Knesset at its opening. He said, quote, today is a great day for us. Let it not be considered arrogance if I say that this is also a great day for the world. A message of hope and encouragement goes forth today from this house and from this holy city to all the oppressed and persecuted peoples of the world who are struggling for freedom and equality. There is a reward for a just war. If we, the pitifully diminished and woefully oppressed nation, have reached this point, there is hope for all those who wait for justice. From this house and this holy city, at this great moment, we send fraternal greetings to all the scattered members of our nation, wherever they might be. We extend our hand in peace to our neighbors and in friendship to all the peace-loving nations. Our greetings and gratitude go out to all the great and small nations which have recognized Israel, and we give a warm welcome to the representatives of the foreign nations and the religious leaders who have honored this occasion with their presence. Knesset members, I congratulate you on your first meeting. Remember that the eyes of the whole Jewish world are upon you, and that the yearning and prayers of past generations accompany you. May we all be worthy of this great moment and this immense responsibility. End quote. Weizmann did more than welcome the Knesset members in the present. He sought to reference heroes of the past, and he added, quote, before we start our labors, let us remember the leaders and teachers of the nation, the founders of the movement, and the commanders of our enterprise, whose vision and deeds have brought us to this moment. We reverence in particular the leader of the movement, the creator of political Zionism, Theodor Herzl, his colleague, the defender of his people, Max Nordau, Nachum Sokolov, our teacher and preacher, Achad Ha'am, the genius of our poetry and our national culture, Chaim Nachman Bialik, the reviver of our Hebrew language, Eliezer Ben Yehuda, the pillar of devotion to Zion, Menachem Ussishkin, the flower of American Jewry, Louis Brandeis, and the great benefactor, the father of Jewish settlement, Edmund de Rothschild. We remember all our brethren in this country and in the Zionist movement who have passed on without witnessing this day with us. We stand to attention and honor the memories of our precious and beloved children, those young heroes who died so that the state of Israel might be established, end quote. Of course, Weizmann did not make mention of one towering political figure in the Zionist movement, Vladimir Jabotinsky, who certainly deserved to be mentioned. But we ought not to be surprised that he ignored someone that was seen by his faction as a political rival. But more striking was that no one from the previous centuries of Jewish history was mentioned. Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik noticed this and said of Chaim Weizmann's speech at the Knesset meeting as follows, quote, "He began with the Katowice Conference and the Bilu movement in the 1880s. He managed to name Theodor Herzl, Max Nordau, Nachum Sokolov, Achad Ha'am, Chaim Nachman Bialik, Eliezer Ben Yehuda, Menachem Osishkin, Louis Brandeis, and Edmund Rothschild. But he quote-unquote forgot to mention all the generations from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Rabbi Mendel of Vitebsk, who fasted and bemoaned the destruction of the temple, who ignored all the persecutions, the mockery and laughter, who continued to hope that tomorrow the temple would be rebuilt, and envisioned the great edifice that would tower over all the mountaintops," end quote. Rabbi Soloveitchik's point is that all those from the Jewish past whose longing for Jerusalem was so central to the Jewish return deserve to be mentioned at this point. And there's one act that actually occurred prior to the opening of the Knesset that intentionally or otherwise can be seen as a hint to the Jewish past. That day was Tu B'Shvat, the Jewish New Year for trees. The Knesset gathering was held in the Jewish Agency building in Jerusalem. On the way to the assembly, David Ben-Gurion paused at Shar Hagai, the road to Jerusalem that was also known as Bab el-Wad, where a year before so many had died in attempting to break the Arab siege of Jerusalem. And there, as captured in a famous photo, Ben-Gurion planted a tree. It is a striking scene and an incredible image, and it brings to mind the phrase in Deuteronomy, Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, which can be translated as, man is akin to a tree in the field. Why is man like unto a tree? One possibility, offered by Rabbi Soloveitchik, is that man, much like a tree, has roots, a past, and is defined by them and connected to them. For Judaism, we are like unto trees because we do not forget our past. Interestingly, one of the loveliest poems about trees is by Philip Larkin. But what is interesting is that for Larkin, one is to see, in the spring of every New Year's blooming, the death of the past. His poem, titled The Trees, is as follows. The trees are coming into leaf, like something almost being said. The recent buds relax and spread. Their greenness is a kind of grief. Is it that they are born again and we grow old? No, they die too. Their yearly trick of looking new is written down in rings of grain. Yet still the unresting castles thresh in full-grown thickness every May. Last year is dead, they seem to say. Begin afresh, afresh, afresh. So he wrote. It's a beautiful poem, but it is, I think, un-Jewish because it's essentially saying that every year is new and the past is gone. To this, Jews respond, yes, every year is new, but the past is not dead. And if we are akin to trees, it is, as Rabbi Soloveitchik said, because our roots, our past, define and nurture us. And in the end, it is the fact that Ben-Gurion chose to have the first Knesset meeting in Jerusalem that highlighted how the roots of the Jewish people define Jewish identity. The image of Ben-Gurion planting the tree marks not only the miracle of the restoration of Jewish sovereignty, but also of how, in the Jewish return, the land truly bloomed. But above all, the image of Ben-Gurion with that small sapling on the way to the Knesset opening reflects the Jewish rootedness not only in the land but also in the sacred city. Though the Knesset would meet much of that year in Tel Aviv, it took pains to first convene in Jerusalem, where it would soon be officially set. The planting of that tree on the road to the sacred city was itself a statement about the Jewish past, about Jewish roots, roots that bound the Jews to Jerusalem, a city that was divided for the moment, but not for long. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.